With me this week are Eleanor Drinkwater. Welcome back, Eleanor. Good to have you with us.
Hi.
Eleanor's a animal behavioural scientist. You work at the University of York. And you have brought in something animalistic.
Yes, I have. I have brought in a photo of the most adorable creature on the planet, which many of you may not realise is actually the woodlouse. So if you flip over a woodlouse, on its underside, when they are pregnant, the female actually has a pouch in which it will hold its babies before giving birth to them, a little bit like a tiny, tiny wombat.
And you can see this, can you?
Yes. So as you guys can see...
you've got a picture. Can I have a look?
I have.
Can
yes. I see this? There we go.
This is a huge woodlouse. This has been inflated. This has blown up probably about 20 times, 50 times maybe. This is a huge snip. But no, you're quite right. So yes, there's a little pouch on the underside between the front legs, and there's lots of little, they look like little white maggots, but those are the babies.
Yes, they are.
How long will they do that for?
It probably depends on the species, but they wait until they have their first molt. And so then they're big enough that they won't dry out as soon as they hit the outside environment.
And then they eject the babies and they have to fend for themselves.
Yes, although they usually kind of stay near the adults because the babies actually enjoy eating the adults' poo.
Oh, I thought you were going to say enjoy eating the adults.
Yeah. They'd be
until they get older,
to do that.
A bit like teenagers. Then they start sort of devouring their parents' bank balance, in my experience. Eleanor, welcome to the programme. Good to have you with us. Also here, Caroline Crawford, who's an astronomer at Cambridge University's Institute of Astronomy. And you've brought in something for us to see virtually.
Well, yes, virtually. It's a do-it-yourself show and tell. I bring you two planets, but you have to go and look for them in the night sky. And it's just a really good time to remind people what's up in the night sky, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. You've got the winter. It's dark late and it's dark early in the afternoons and in the mornings. When you're going home and it's dark, look for Mars in the night sky over towards the southwest. It's brilliant. It's red. It's low down the horizon. It's really bright. You can't miss it. And it'll be up till about 11 o'clock at night. And then in the mornings, if you're a relatively early riser, for about 3 hours before the sun rises, you can see Venus. And you can't miss Venus. Apart from the moon, it's the brightest thing in the night sky. Mm. Low down towards the southeast direction. So you can see Mars and you can see Venus at either edge of the night. And just one more thing, my favourite meteor shower is coming up. It's the Geminids. They peak, probably not for a couple of weeks, 13th, 14th of December, but I love this one. It's quite predictable. Go out late at night, preferably after the half moon's gone down, and you begin to see them. They peak around 2 o'clock in the morning, but you don't have to stay up that late. You can start to see them really towards after about 9 o'clock at night. And the thing about these is they're reliable. And when the meteors come, they're quite slow and they're quite bright. And so you can't miss them. So that's coming to a sky near you very soon.
Do they correspond to a cloud of dust that's just in our patch of the solar system, so that as the Earth goes around on its orbit, it sort of sweeps through that cloud of dust? And that's why we see them every year at this time.
Yeah, well, this is a particular trail of debris that's left behind a little asteroid called 3200 Pantheon. It's sort of disintegrating, and it's got this cloud that's followed its orbit. And every year we go through it on the same time of year. And then you get all these little bits of grit falling into the atmosphere and just producing these wonderful shooting stars. And it's all happening about, 100 kilometres up.
Wonderful. Caroline, thank you. Welcome to the programme as well. Sitting next to Caroline, Patrick Short, who's a geneticist from the Wellcome Sanger Institute. He also is the CEO of a startup, which is called Heterogeneous. Interesting name for a genetics startup. What does it do?
So it helps people learn more about their genetics and health, and also gives them greater control over their data. So it allows them to control who gets to access it and what it's used for, which is missing.
It's gone up the agenda a lot, data security, hasn't it?
That's right.
Especially genetic data and personal data. When did it start, the company?
About a year and a half ago.
And how does it make money?
So researchers use this data for all sorts of purposes. And actually, there are a lot of companies already that sell people's data. They just don't realize it. So what we do instead is allow people to sell it on their own terms, or to participate for free if they already have a disorder. For instance, a lot of patients are mainly keen to get their data out there so it can be used and get closer to a cure.
I thought Facebook had the angle on this.
They're certainly trying. So are Google and everyone else. But we're hoping we can give people a little more control.
Welcome, Patrick. Have you brought anything with you?
I did. I brought a little stuffed animal, actually, which, like the woodlouse from earlier,
is that your mascot?
Is blown up. It's not our mascot. Maybe it should be. It's a water bear. The scientific name is a tardigrade. That's right. And I brought it because it actually is one of the things that got me really excited about biology in the first place. So this little animal can survive radioactive bombs. It can survive being dried out and frozen and heated up to thousands of degrees. No matter what you throw at it, basically, it still survives. So I always thought it was quite amazing that an animal has figured out how to survive such extremes. So I think we're still, from a genetics perspective, trying to figure out how it does all these things. But it's quite a cool little creature.
They've flown in space, haven't they, tardigrades?
Oh, yes, yes, they're incredibly robust.
Amazing. And last but not least, Liliana Fruk is from Cambridge University. She's a chemist and she has a penchant for nanotech and biotechnology as well. And you have got an array of tubes. You've brought in a stereotypical chemist's
rack of tubes.
What's in there?
I thought I need to show what chemists are still about, and we are still about tubes. So I do have a selection of some of my nanomaterials that we prepared in the lab. So I have carbon nanodiamonds that get really people excited all the time I mention.
But
they
don't.
Yeah, but you know, unfortunately, they look like a gray powder.
So that'll come in handy if you've got a nano girlfriend, won't it?
Yeah.
A nano engagement ring.
I mean, can you just imagine how wonderful that would be? Because it's actually made.
I mean, I don't want to rain on your parade or anything, Liliana, but this just looks like you poured some milk in a tube, if I'm being honest, and you diluted the milk a bit. It looks like half off milk. What is this?
You know, it's all about the story. Eh? How are you telling
the story?
It better be,
because this is not inspiring.
But if I tell you that these nanodiamonds were made in a huge explosion in a special chamber, and they are used for biosensing of a small parts of the cells, then you would be a little bit more impressed.
Well, how did you make them then?
So we actually buy them from the company that makes them in the big explosion chambers. But what we do, we modify their surfaces. So we need to make them stable and adjustable to enter the cells. So, you know, it's lots of chemistry out there.
Thank you, Liliana. Now, before we dive into the questions for our panel, we've got a quiz running throughout the programme. We did this on our last Q&A show, and congratulations if you did cotton on to the fact that our mystery creature that time was an ostrich. Can you, meanwhile, tell us what this week's creature is? Here's one of the sounds it makes. Give you some more clues as we go through the programme.